Welcome back to Coffee with Yvonne, a show for creatives and entrepreneurs. I'm Yvonne Pearson, your host and the founder of Pink Dollhouse Marketing, coming to you live from underneath my coat. I lie to you not, my coat is currently over my head, and the reason why my coat is over my head is because I'm not home. I'm in New York for a content trip, and if you follow me on social media, you probably already seen like the announcement of, you know, what the content trip is for. If not, go ahead and go watch my stories on social, as well as any reels or TikToks if you follow me on all the things. So I'm in New York for a content trip, and when I was in the haste of packing, I forgot my microphone. I know, content creator 101, you don't forget your equipment. I remembered, y'all, everything else. I remember my extra battery packs. I remembered all my USB cables, my iPad, iPencil, and my laptop, but I did not remember my microphone. Fortunately, I had in my kit my plug-in headphones that I bought for like $9 at Target. But they come in handy for a backup whenever I'm meeting with, you know, fellow content creators or just, you know, on the road in general. So if I sound a little different today, that is why. I don't have my usual microphone, but I wanted to make sure the pod got out on time because we have a jam-packed schedule to continue with our financial and wellness series and some sprinkle for some razzle dazzle of content in between from past episodes, as well as a special episode for Black History Month. But before we get into this episode, which is with Mr. Aaron Slaughter, who is someone I went to college with and a certified public accountant who's gonna talk to us about managing your finances and tips and tricks for like budgeting and helping to manage the money for your small business. We got to get into our What's the Brew, which is our new segment in which we talk about current topics happening in the creative and entrepreneurial space. So grab your coffee and let's chat. Okay, let's see what we got. Let's see what is happening. Kim Kardashian, I'll pass. Wait a minute. This one is good. This was reported by OK Africa. The African operations of Prime Video, they're cutting funding for the original content in Africa and in the Middle East. So according to OK Africa, it states that the African operations of Prime Video are about to take a hit. Part of the new content strategy that not only affects Africa alone, but also in the Middle East, is the streamer is reconfiguring its international business model in favor of European originals. Mm-hmm. The implications are quite dire, as it will see a scaling down of local content in these regions and laying off of staff. Pre-existing content slated for the streamer, greenlit or contracted, remains unaffected by the new overhaul. Prime Video entered the African market in 2016, introducing itself as a new player to rival Netflix and other streamers. In 2022, it doubled down on this by launching in Nigeria and working with local storytellers to greenlight its original titles like Jade, Gangs of Lagos, and it remains Prime Video's first African original movie. Okay. Now, how can I put this nicely? For those of you who are in the DEI space, I don't know if you have noticed, but I have noticed that there has been a trend of companies reducing or cutting in its entirety content and projects related to DEI, which means diversity, equity, and inclusion. And to be totally frank, it seems to me that this is almost backpedaling from all the companies who pledged to do more to increase diversity, equity, inclusion in certain spaces that were lacking. One of the things I can note is the 15% pledge that was created by a Black woman in the beauty space to basically let companies put up or shut up about creating more opportunities for Black and people of color owned brands to be part of like shelf space in like Sephora, Ulta, you know, et cetera. And it seems to me that now that we are, what, 3 years post-pandemic, air quotes on that too, after the noise has died down, companies are now reevaluating those programs and deciding to make these drastic cuts that impact a lot of the content that we consume. And even though I use the story from Prime as an example, I could pull up some other examples as well. For example, HBO Max. If we're going to call a spade, let's talk about it. HBO Max brought us the hit show Insecure. We all loved it. You know, we can still quote it to this day. Kelly's my girl. And they signed a partnership agreement with Issa Rae, the creator from Insecure, to create even more content for the platform. And I have noticed, along with other people who slide into my DMs, because that's cool, I have noticed that there has been a reduction of those shows or cancellation in general over the past, what would you say, like what, 6 months to maybe a year, but more so 6 months. For example, Rap Shit. One of my favorite shows on the platform, it was Real Raw, True Miami. One of my other favorite podcasters, Kid Fury, was a writer on the show because he is from Miami. Another show, a Black lady sketch show created by Robin Thede, hilarious Black woman. It was one of my favorites because the content and the comedy was culturally in line with who we are, right? You know, talking about things like, you know, edge control, a Black lady courtroom, Black lady courtroom, clap, clap. Like those were things that just felt real, right? Another show I loved on HBO Max, Southside, was a big favorite of mine that I used to watch. And if we were to move on to another network, NBC had Grand Crew, which was like our answer for Seinfeld. It was just us being us. But once again, shows that feature our stories in a way that do not align with the stereotypes that are presented of us by other platforms, or don't lean into stories that, you know, heavily involve like, you know, gangster life, drug use, et cetera, et cetera. Show us coming from the grit to try to like climb our way to the top. Just being regular everyday people always get chopped. They never survive past two seasons. And it's very disheartening because when we get invested in these shows, when we build community around these shows, and we look forward to, you know, having a way of seeing ourselves outside of what the media wants to portray us as, it is tough when we see time and time again those stories being chopped from these platforms. And Prime Video is another example of a company who has dove all in to funding our stories only to cut them when it needs to meet the needs of amplifying what they've already been doing. And I'm not surprised. And we're continuing to see this trend happen, not just in the content creative space, but also in the executive space, with positions being eliminated or, you know, reduced in DEI, where you have people who were leading these initiatives to now companies not feeling they need those initiatives anymore. And we're going to be in the same space that we were a few years ago in another matter of time. It won't be today or tomorrow, but it's going to happen because we always circle back to this, right? We always circle back to, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion, amplify, 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 and then it goes reduce. Oh, we're back to normal. Everything's fine. And then someone brings something to someone's attention that makes it to a major platform that gets a lot of attention, and here we are again. So it continues to be a cycle of giving us space and then taking it away. And I know the solution a lot of time is just build your own platform. It is easier said than done because people like Issa Rae built their own platforms. She had Awkward Black Girl. She put in the work. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of resources out there that don't give us the opportunity outside of aligning ourselves with these big brands, right? We have BET, we have other platforms, but in terms of broadening our audience, there's not a lot out there for us that are Black owned or Black and people of color founded. And the solution is always to create your own, but that also takes capital, that takes time, that takes work. And we're doing the work, but it's hard to keep building when the powers that be, because it is the powers that be, keep reducing us down to where they want to keep us. And that's all I'm going to say on that. In our next story, let's look for some good news. Let's see. Niecy Nash, we love her. I know y'all saw that video on the socials. Yes, ma'am. Oh, I like this. Patrice Dixon, the owner of Honey Pot, if you are not aware, she sold her majority stake to Coty for $380 million. Yes, ma'am. Okay. So this was reported on Because of Them We Can. Patrice Dixon is the visionary owner of the Honey Pot Company and recently achieved significant milestone by selling a majority stake in the Black-owned brand for an impressive $380 million. This is a triumph, in particularly noteworthy in the natural period care sector, where Honey Pot has been a pioneering force since its establishment in 2012. This acquisition was made by Compass Diversified Coty, a publicly traded holding company specializing in niche middle marketing businesses, with the aim of expanding the Honey Pot's footprint in the natural period care space. Their investment is set to propel the brand even further. The Honey Pot's existing leadership team will stay in place, retaining a significant minority stake. Despite muted shareholder response, this move challenges industry leaders like Kotex and Tampax. The brand assured its audience on Instagram that its product quality won't change. Dixon remains committed to trust, transparency, and empathy, acknowledging the history of vaginal care and Black-founded brands. I am a fan of the Honey Pot. And you know what? I would love to have her on my show. Let's speak that into existence, shall we? But the Honey Pot brand, I've been a user for a very long time. I think since probably 2017. The Honey Pot brand uses herbs to help reduce symptoms, period symptoms that women experience. And, you know, for those who are lucky to not experience those things, great for you. But for those who aren't, it really does help make it less uncomfortable by using these products. All of us who, you know, when we grew up as tweens and teens, we only had so many choices, right? We had Always, Kotex, and Tampax. Unbeknownst to a lot of us, there are a lot of things in those products that could have been making our periods worse. And the Honey Pot, when it came along, you know, every product isn't for everyone. Let me put that clarifier out there. But for me, it really worked. And I stocked up immediately. In fact, there was a time you could not find Honey Pot on the shelf because as soon as they stocked it, it was gone. And the community really supported the founder of Honey Pot in helping her grow and amplify that brand that you could buy at Target. And to know that now that she has sold her majority stake in the company for a really great amount will really allow for us to continue to compete in those spaces with the Kotex and the Tampax, who have a big threshold or footprint in the industry. As a Black woman, that's phenomenal. And I know we have our feelings about selling our companies. There's another brand, Miel Organics. Everybody was up in arms when they sold their company and were afraid that it will lose the quality, you know, X, Y, and Z. There's a reason why companies sell, because a lot of times, and this is just my opinion, you can only grow a company so much. Sometimes you do hit a ceiling, right? And sometimes selling a percentage stake in your company allows you to open up the amount of resources that you would have by partnering with a larger conglomerate that will take that brand to the next level. This sale can take Honeypot to being a $1 billion brand. And also, as the caption mentioned, it will allow for them to continue their footprint in the natural period care space, which is a big deal. I really love the fact that our good sis is getting her money. I really love the fact that she is continuing to stay on to make sure her voice is heard and that she is part of this progression forward. And I can't wait to see where the Honeypot goes in expanding their products in feminine care. As I mentioned on the pod today is Mr. Aaron Slaughter. Aaron and I went to college together. We go back like hoodies and flip-flops on the quad. But I have known Aaron for that long, and to see him become a successful, hardworking person who manages to still find time to give back to his community through his work and also through giving back at our alumni, McDaniel College, is really great to see. At the time of recording, Aaron was up for a promotion. Now, Aaron has received the promotion, clap, 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 go Aaron, and is officially a VP in accounting, which we are so proud of him. I hope you enjoy this episode. Take a lot of notes, my fellow small business and creatives, because this is advice people don't give out for free. Okay. And Aaron did that as a favor for me to share his knowledge and just some tips and suggestions from his professional point of view. So make sure you grab that pen, grab that pencil, sit back and listen to this wonderful conversation with Mr. Aaron Slaughter. Educated today, that's your bio. Like, oh, the journey. I'm just so proud. Okay. All right. All right. Before I get into his bio, I want to say hi, Aaron.
Oh, so I know this is a radio audience. You can't tell, but I'm blushing right now just from hearing all the kind words you're saying about me. But yes, we do go way back like four flats on my Cadillac. So it's good to see you. It's good to talk to you. It's good to have a chance to catch up with you for a little bit.
Yeah. And you know, and when I mean we go way back, I mean like back to Glar, you pulling up with your slides and them socks and that hoodie you lived in with the basketball shorts. I couldn't understand if you were hot or cold sometimes. I'm like, Aaron, what are you wearing today?
Listen, when you have practice and training camp and film sessions and try to make it to class and just grab something to eat, I'm not getting super dressed up. So that was the athlete uniform. It was the hoodie, it was some Nike slides, it was some basketball shorts, and it was the backpack.
And it worked out for you because you still graduated on time.
Absolutely.
We've been out of school for over 10 years now, and now you have your professional bio, not just your football bio, but your professional bio. Aaron Slaughter, CPA and senior manager for Waltham Smith Brown. He is practicing out of the Washington, D.C. office and specializes in accounting at auditing of multi-employer benefit plans and labor organizations. With over 10 years of experience in public accounting, Mr. Slaughter, you're Mr. Slaughter now? That's so weird. Mr. Slaughter has assisted in a plethora of audits, agreed upon procedure engagements, and special projects. His expertise includes work for local and national employee benefit plans, health and welfare plans, pension funds and labor organizations, small business organizations, and not-for-profit entities. In addition to his accounting and out-of-state experience, he also assists in the recruiting efforts of his firm. Mr. Slaughter is a certified public accountant, CPA, in the state of Maryland, a member of the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, a member of the National Association of Black Accountants, and a member of the Next Execs Committee for Bethesda Chamber of Commerce. He is a 2021 40 Under 40 Black CPA Award recipient. And lastly, he is also a member of our alumni, McDaniel College Board of Trustees, where he earned a dual Bachelor of Arts degree in accounting and economics. And with that being said, welcome to Coffee with Yvonne, Aaron!
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. Yes, I am Mr. Slaughter. That's what I go by sometimes.
You are professional now. It's just weird, but you know, we'll make it work. We've all like elevated since college. And we were like the few minorities on campus. So to know the great things that we're doing now makes my heart very proud. So yeah. All right. You ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
Okay. Remember, it's just me. So no need to feel like you're being nervous or anything. I got you. All right. So when I first started Pink Dollhouse, I track my expenses using a spreadsheet, and now I use tools like QuickBooks to keep track of invoices and costs. For those who are just starting out, can you please share a few recommendations? And I mean real recommendations, because I know people who have receipts in shoeboxes or have snapshots on their phone. It's not a real accounting system. So Aaron, please tell them what they need to be doing better to build and keep track of their expenses.
So there are a couple of different things, because if you are working for a company and it's a small company, something like QuickBooks is perfect, where it'll help you and guide you through the accounting process for people who don't really have the accounting background. If we're talking about your personal expenses and just keeping track of expense reports, there are a ton of apps that let you take pictures of receipts and kind of organize it all for you by date, by purpose, by the type of expense, whether it's a meal or it's an airline or it's a hotel or lodging, that helps you group all of that together so that you can have it in an organized way and then really track where you're spending your dollars. I know a lot of banks and their online platforms have a mechanism that'll let you track how you're spending your money each month so that you can kind of get a sense of where your money is going. But I'm old school. So when I graduated from college, I sat with my computer and charted everything out in Excel as far as how much I was going to spend here per month and how much was going to go to food or gas or whatever the case was. So I would say the most important thing is that you understand a budget and just set some time aside to come up with what you are comfortable spending and then put it on paper. Because if you don't see it illustrated, it's hard to tell where your money's going.
I know a lot of fellow creators who make it, then blow their money and then wonder where their money goes afterwards and why they can't afford to do things like invest in going to a creative conference or even doing things like, you know, building their business with other tools. And knowing that working for yourself, the money can ebb and flow, sometimes not making any money at all for a period of time. How can creatives manage their money so they're financially set even during those slower periods?
So there are certain things that you can do to help yourself. The first thing I would say to do is to get a completely separate credit card and bank account so that you are only using that for the expenses that are associated with your business. It'll allow you to earn points faster, but it'll also let you see at a quick glance where to go with your money, and you can pivot easier if something happens and you need to go in a different direction. If someone did hack, you can have a surefire way to get out of that and have some protections in place so that it's not coming straight from your checking or savings account, like how a debit card is linked to it. I was just having this conversation today with some younger staff in my office because they haven't fully grasped and adapted the whole credit card life. And some people aren't ready for it yet. So because it does take discipline. And we sat in my office and talked about not paying interest because you're paying off your balance every month and some of those things. And I know if you have your own business, maybe you're not in the cash position to pay off your balance every single month. But the credit card life absolutely puts you in a better position to be able to just float and just have some leeway to use the tools at your advantage. So I would find a bank that's offering really good reward card. And I would just talk to them and say, look, I have my own business. I want to do business with your bank. I know you're going to come through for me. And they're pretty loyal and they're pretty lenient as far as terms. And then they'll work with you. And then just take advantage of all the rewards that you can. So we talked about budgeting a little bit. Certainly get the separate bank account and then use that card only for your business expenses.
And that's actually good to know, because like when I'm traveling for anything dealing with Pink Dollhouse, I use my business bank card. I even budget at the beginning of the year the things I want to attend. So when I'm making the additional money, I'm putting that money aside for any food, travel, lodging, etc. And I actually, Aaron, to tell you the truth, I don't have a business credit card. I do everything through my own personal investment, because I am at a point where I could get one, but I'm choosing not to at the moment because I'd rather make sure I'm always paying off everything as I go. instead of just using borrowed money to make things happen. Does that make sense?
It does. And like I said, there's really no one right or wrong answer. You got to figure out what works for you. But I know my own personal life, I don't use my debit card ever unless I'm at the casino taking money out. But it's neither here nor there. But I'm using my credit card for everything because I travel a bunch. So I have rewards for airlines, I have hotel credit cards. So I'm taking advantage of everything.
So side hustles or working under the table has grown in appeal for people who want to start a business without the paperwork. What are the financial positives and negatives of this?
So, as far as not having your side business be on paper legitimate and incorporated or whatever the word you want to use, I would say that the tax advantages are going to be very advantageous for you to go ahead and make it official. There are certain things, and I'm not a tax accountant, but there are certain things with the tax code where if you're operating at a loss, you can carry forward your losses. And even though you're making money on paper, you're showing your losses and carrying it forward into subsequent years, which is going to put you at a better tax position as far as how much tax liability you're going to owe. So there's just things in the tax code that are going to help you out as far as having your business be legitimized. The other things is talk as far as just exposure. So if I'm someone who's trying to hire you and you have a legitimate business and I can go to your website and see it and ask around and see reviews and that sort of thing, that's going to add credibility that you're not going to have without those types of things already set in place. And then it's just far as tracking and some of the things that we've talked about already, just budgeting and just having it be separate and treating it as your business. And that's going about it in a professional manner. All of that is kind of all linked together. So I wouldn't say there's anything in a vacuum. Now, I know some people work under the table because they like to skirt the tax law and then they might think that it's going to be better for them. But in my opinion, I've seen that go a little haywire because if the government does ever come around and figure out what's going on, now you're getting audited and you don't want to ever be on the wrong side of old Uncle Sam. So.
No, you do not. And thinking about too, saving your money, how can creatives actively build a better savings or cushion for themselves, whenever they get paid, because I know the checks can be very appeasing. You see a check come in for like $10,000, you're on your way to Target and the Gucci store, and you're like, yeah, I got money. But in reality, you got to plan for that $10,000 sometimes to stretch longer than 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months. So, what are your suggestions for saving and building your cushion?
So the first thing I'll say to that is a lot of times people don't think about the tax ramifications and they don't put aside money at all for the tax piece of it. And then when it comes tax time, now they get hit with this huge, hefty tax bill and they don't have the money for it. And then they get into a jam. So the first thing is just understanding you have to put money aside to pay your taxes. And depending on how much you're making, you might even have to make quarterly estimates of payments for your taxes. So I would absolutely talk to a CPA and maybe if you don't have the funds to pay for an expensive CPA, but if you have someone in your circle who you can just run some questions by, it's always good to have someone checking on that thing. That's the first thing. The second thing is if you have not started a retirement plan, I would say you want to get that. And the thing that's kind of working against us is time because we can't get this time back. You can't get your early 20s back. You can't get your early 30s back. So the sooner you can start investing into your own retirement and opening up a 401k or something like that, that's going to be beneficial for you. And then maxing out what the IRS allows you to put in for an individual for your own retirement because that's going to compound over time and you'll look up and when you get to age 55, 60, how much that money has grown into, and then it'll go a long way as far as what you're able to walk away from when you do want to hang up and retire. And the third thing is just being diligent about investing. And I am also not a finance guy as far as Wall Street, but I'm around a lot of money folks, and I'm always stroking the trees as far as what to do and what should a young person with some money in their pockets do. And it's just invest and it's being diligent and consistent. And it's If you're going to go out and have a good time, make sure you put aside some to invest in. Start a Fidelity account or a Vanguard account and just socking away money and just buying whatever it is that you want once you've done your research. But it's about having, you've probably heard the term diversified portfolio, but it's getting into index funds and maybe even some fixed incomes. And right now we're in a high inflation period. So those treasury inflation protected securities, those are doing pretty, I won't say well, because 22's been a really tough market, but they're doing less worse than the other securities that are out there. So it's just about making sure that you are making a conscious effort to invest. Because the one thing I can tell you is if you don't ever do it, if you don't think about it, it's never going to happen. So in my own personal life, I've set aside automatic transfers in my own bank that it goes straight from my checking to my savings accounts, and I never even see the money. And I have one that automatically goes from my checking account to my investment portfolio, and I never even see the money. So whatever you have to do to make it easy on yourself, it's kind of like getting a gym membership. If you got to get a gym that's close to your home, do it. If you got to get a gym that's close to your job, do it. Whatever's going to make it easier for you, then that's what it is.
And see, that's something I definitely do. So two things. So in my full-time job, of course, I have 401ks and other good stuff, but with Pink Dollhouse, with my freelance work, I have my business bank account, and whenever I get paid, money automatically goes into my tax bucket, it automatically goes into my savings bucket, and the money also goes automatically into additional savings accounts that are outside of that main account. And that is building, interest. I'm not an accounting person. We took class together. I failed that class, but it's building like the interest and stuff over time. And it's just good to see that money grow, that you're not using, but it's there as a resource if you ever need it. Now, being transparent, Black and minorities are the fastest growing segment of business owners, yet we do struggle with maintaining the business due to financial mismanagement or capital backing to grow the business. In your opinion, and again, this is a safe space. Why do you think that this is the case?
Oh, I'm gonna take it all the way back to when we were growing up. A lot of us did not have someone sit down with them and explain to them finances. They didn't explain to them credit. They didn't explain to them why it's important to not go out and get a credit card as soon as you can, and to not go out and get. I remember when we were little kids in middle school into high school, Nextel was the big thing, and everybody ran out and opened an account and got the Nextel phones because everybody wanted to chirp. And then you look up and your credit was trash. So you spend your mid and late 20s trying to fix credit. Well, you're already behind the eight ball. So a lot of it goes to just the information sharing that a lot of us never had. And I was fortunate because I do come from a single parent household, but I remember being 7, 8, 9 years old, sitting in the car with my mother and her telling us about credit. Like, look, son, this is why you have to do this. And no, you're not going to do this. And so I was fortunate because I didn't have some of those things to dig myself out of. So when I did get a degree and find a nice job that's going to have a nice paycheck, I was able to set myself up to be better. But as far as the question that you asked me, a lot of it comes from information. And the money comes fast sometimes, and then it goes even faster. And it's financial literacy is often talked about, and people try to throw classes at people and educate them to be financially literate, but it's more than that. It's a mindset. It's being in the right support system that's going to allow you to have the tools and the means that you need to try stuff and fail and not be catastrophic. And sometimes we just don't have that. We don't have parents that can give us five, ten, $20,000 loans to go out and start businesses and fail. And I mean, a lot of we're navigating all these circles without any kinds of help. So I would encourage you all to go find a mentor, whether it's I was fortunate because I had a professor who changed my life and turned me on to accounting and didn't let me leave the Hill, McDaniel College, without a plan and a job and some of those other things that a lot of people don't have. So find a mentor, bug them, pick their brain, and just it's not enough to say, oh, we didn't have it growing up. Like, at some point, you have to take responsibility for learning the information that you don't even know that you don't know. And it's trying to find the right circles to be in, join professional organizations, and go to meetings and cast a wide net so your network is big, so you can have the conversations that are going to lead to the answers that might help you with decisions that you have to make.
And you know what, Aaron, also another thing we don't do enough, piggybacking off of what you said, we don't talk about money openly in our communities. Like, we are the kind of people, let's say, for example, you finally get that six figures is good, but six plus figure job, you don't talk about it with your family about how you're managing your money or how what that kind of paycheck will look like after you take care of your 401ks and all that other stuff. And we kind of keep it a secret. And then when we end up in debt, or if we lose our jobs, or, you know, don't know how to manage the money, all of a sudden we're trying to get out of crisis. And that's when we're talking freely. So I think what other thing we could do is start having these conversations earlier, even if we are in our 20s or with our nieces and nephews, about the importance of money management, and teach them, okay, if you want these Jordans so bad, all right, these Jordans cost, I don't know how much Jordans cost, I wear Chucks, but these Jordans cost $175. I'm just shooting a number out there. Save up your money for this period of weeks so you can get these Jordans. And at the end of that period of weeks, let's look at that money to see what you could be investing in to get you 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pair of Jordans down the line instead of spending that money now. But we're not having those conversations enough. So you're right. You're absolutely right.
Agreed.
And then also, you're a Black man working in finance. And I know in my field, where I am still a minority, because there's only 6% of Black people from entry level to executive in marketing, you are a rare breed. Let's just be honest. Having someone like you in a visible role is important from a representation perspective. How are you using your platform? I know from the content you post that if you can share how you're using your platform to educate and advocate for the community.
Well, I am the first CPA in my entire family, and I'm actually waiting to hear if I make partner this year, and I'll find out in a few weeks. So to be a Black man at a $400 million firm as a partner, I'm going to be over the moon. So that's the first thing. To the question of how I'm using my platform, I make it a point to go back to talk to schools, football teams, organizations, neighborhoods. I'll talk to anybody who will listen, because I didn't know any Black accountants when I was in school. And if you would have told me one day you'll be a CPA and you'll be a partner at a firm, I would have laughed at you, because I wanted to go to the NFL and play for a couple of years. And then who knows, maybe go be an engineer or something, which is what I originally wanted to go to school for. But it's about having someone that you can look to and say, wow, this person did it, so can I. So I do a bunch of recruiting for my firm. It's kind of dwindled down to just be more McDaniel and now HBCU. So I try to get in front of as many accounting classes and clubs that I can and just show them, like, look, this is what you're studying so hard for. This is why you take these hard classes. This is what life will look like when you're done walking through these quads and having these college parties and doing whatever the fun stuff that you're doing and putting in the work. And you finish the CPA exam, this is what life is going to look like. And it's going to take you places that you would have never imagined. My first time on the West Coast was through this job. And I went to my boss, like, look, I come from humble beginnings. We didn't travel a lot as a kid. If we get any travel clients, put me on all of them. And that's what they did. I mean, that's why I was going to New York and LA and Portland, Oregon and Philadelphia and New Orleans and Vegas and just all over the country, just seeing the world on somebody else's dime, because I was fortunate to have someone show me the way. So mentorship is huge. You read in my bio that I was actually named 40 under 40 Black CPAs in America. And a lot of what the criteria was that they looked at was not just how successful you are, but how successful are you making everyone around you? And are you giving back? And I actually became a big brother and a big brother, little brother program that pairs you with a young man from a background similar to mine. So single parent household here in DC, and just shuffling him along the whole college application process and just showing him what being an adult and being a professional and just having someone in his corner looks like. So as far as what I do, I would spend all my time trying to get back if I could. If they didn't throw billable budgets and deadlines at me, I didn't have actual clients that I needed to take care of. But if I can find time to go talk to someone or show them the way or give them money. And that's exactly what I try to do, because we need more of that. We need more mentorship, and we need more people that are going to help bring people along and make that learning curve a little bit easier for the people coming after them, so that when we're doing this 2, 3, 4 years down the road, it won't be that I'm the only Black CPA in my family, and it won't be that we don't have CPAs that are in line to be partners at firms that look like you and me. It'll be, oh my gosh, that was a thing in the past. Remember when? Look how far we've come. So, yeah.
And you know, I appreciate you saying that, because again, representation truly does matter. I know from my field, when I see my VP walk into our office every day, she's a Black woman. My director, he is a Black man. That took almost 10 years of me working in my field to have two senior leaders who look like me, you know, that I report to on a day-to-day basis. And even me myself, I don't realize sometimes how much power there is in representation when I'm either, you know, speaking or going to meetings or even like doing media features for like TV, until I get the DMs. And, you know, the DMs are like, I saw you on Channel 5, and, you know, my daughter was like, oh my God, mom, she looks like me. She has pink glasses. She has natural hair. You know, it's little things you don't realize are so impactful, especially when you're sitting in meetings with your hair like this and no one's batting an eye because they're used to you. It's so important. And to your point, we want it to be the norm. We want it to be that kids, no matter what background they come from, like us, single parent homes, feel like they belong in every single space that they walk into without question, without fear. So I'm proud of you for the work that you're doing. And I see you one day, Erin, honestly having your own nonprofit specializing in something like this, like, you know, young future Black CPAs of America or something like that. I don't know. But I could see you doing something like that to create more impact on your platform. Just a thought.
The sky is the limit. So I have no idea where my career is going to take me. I do see mentorship, and people ask me if I'm going to be a motivational speaker one day. Just who knows? But I do like that idea, though, just because I do want to create a space for young Black women, men and women who want to go into this field.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense for you. Now, thinking about what you said before about inflation, there have been rumors about a looming recession. And with inflation and other things to consider, minority-owned businesses tend to suffer the brunt of any economic downturn. How can we financially prepare for a possible recession?
Oh, this is a tough one. It's a tough one because you ask 10 different economists, are we in a recession? You'll probably get 8 different answers. And to your first point about how minorities often are going to get hit first, and that goes back to what we were talking about with support system. So sometimes we don't have the $20,000, $50,000, $100,000 cushions to absorb some of these hits if the customers run dry, if we have a stay home for a pandemic, and we don't have those safety nets sometimes. So I think one of the very first things that you can do to protect yourself is to try to build up that reserve. And if it means saving more, if it means going out one less weekend a month, it's trying to do those things that are gonna help you build that emergency fund for if we do see another downturn. And I mean, I'm not an economist and I don't try to play one on TV, so I'm not even gonna speculate about whether or not we're in a recession. What I will say is the Fed is trying their best to navigate raising interest rates, but also not driving us into a deeper recession. And that is going to change the way money is being lent. And when you think about how often people that look like you and me are able to obtain loans and what that means, I mean, there have been all kinds of studies on obtaining a mortgage when you're Black. And just, there was a bank that got sued. I want to say it was Wells Fargo that got sued a couple of years ago because of the, not only just the predatory lending that they were doing, but just not giving people loans at all. So I don't know if Wells Fargo was in the predatory, but they were just refused to give people that look like me and you loans. So building up the reserve, yes. Making sure that your investment portfolio, if you have one, is balanced and diversified, and looking into some of those options that are gonna do better than other securities like the inflation protected securities that we talked about a little bit earlier. And
Aaron, do you think there's any value in like CD accounts, like those kind of things? Like, is there any value in those kind of extra savings safety nets?
so I know some of my clients have CDs, and again, with the interest rates kind of going back up, maybe, but it's hard to say. And I am a little reserved to give suggestions on investment stuff because that's not really my background.
Understood,
But
understood.
I will say that some of my clients do have CDs, and but a lot of what I'm seeing now are fixed incomes that have done worse than they have in normal years, but they've done a little bit better than equities, inflation protected securities, and then just trying to do research and find one of those gems of a stock that's just going to do less poorly than other securities, is what I'll say, just because it's been such a tough year. So trying to navigate some of this, it's tricky. And I mean,
Yeah.
it's hard to time the market. I don't know if you've heard the term buying the dip. People are talking about is buying the dip. So as stock prices and prices go down, trying to buy those securities at a lower
Oh, there
cost.
was a Netflix documentary about it on GameStop.
So GameStop, that's a little bit different. There was a group of people who were shorting the stock and
Oh,
kind
okay.
of driving the price and making money off of it that way. And then the loophole kind of got closed. But that was an interesting thing. But buying the dip is just as the prices are falling, you're buying the stocks, you're buying the stocks, hoping that you can take advantage of the lower stock price.
Got
But
it, got it. Okay.
yeah. So I mean, it's really just trying to find some of those safeguards that you can have as a business owner that are going to protect you from if stuff runs dry. And I think, I mean, again, I started this comment with just having that reserves built up and just doing the things that you can to save some of your disposable income just because you might need it for a rainy day.
So one less brunch per month is what you're telling me. Got it.
One less brunch per month could be 200 for some people, could be 500 for some people, depending on if you get the bottle service and all kinds of stuff that goes on with so I'm saying, I don't know.
It's brunch in DC. If you don't get bottomless, why are we here?
Why are you going? Why are you going if you don't get
Why are
bottoms?
we
A matter of
going?
fact, don't even invite me if they don't have the bottomless option.
Exactly. I don't come for a la carte. I come for bottles. Like, don't play with
Me pay seven and bring me two carafes of the year. Give me the good one. Yeah.
want a to-go cup. Don't play with me. but Aaron, you know what? I really enjoyed our conversation, but you know what? We have to do our quick fire questions. Are you ready
Okay.
for them?
Of course.
Okay, now these are top of the dome. No need
Okay.
to overthink it. I just want straight answers, okay?
Gotcha.
Okay, if you were a superhero, what powers would you have?
Oh, give me the ability to fly. Give me,
Really?
yeah. If I didn't have to pay for another flight in my life, that'd be great. Give me super strength.
Okay.
And then I probably would go invincible.
So you're going for like a Superman Wakanda forever kind of feel?
I mean, I did see Black Panther last night,
Did
so
we not?
I'm still on it. But yeah, I'm still on it. I'm thinking like a Superman vibe. My boys in college did call me Superman, so it'd be hard for me not to say Superman right now.
They did call you Superman. I forgot about that nickname. Lord have mercy. And then is, you know what? We're gonna go flashback Friday. Okay, you're back in college. You got your Nike slides and your hoodie on. You know, we're in what was that place called? The club room.
The
We're in
pub,
the
oh, the
club
club room.
room.
Okay.
Yes. What song or rap will you just body at karaoke night?
I'm gonna give you two answers.
Okay.
If this is single me, and I'm singing a song, I'm probably gonna do Usher, You Remind Me, or some kind of Usher song.
Okay.
If I'm doing a rap song, I'm probably gonna do Nas One Mic, because
Okay.
I just know every word to that song. So it's yeah.
Okay. All right. I never guessed those answers coming from you, honestly. Oh, and then last question. You're a busy man. You're always on the go. If you were a coffee, what kind of coffee would you be?
Man, so I will be completely honest with you. I've actually never had a cup of coffee. And I know I'm a CPA and I've been working for 12 years in this field. I've never had a cup of coffee.
How are you staying awake?
I don't know. I'd be high off life. I don't know. But if I were a cup of coffee, I mean, I'm going to just go straight black. No chaser. Because that's how I try to show up every day.
I mean, that's how you have to show up. You know, black coffee, no sugar, no cream, you know, straight up. Well, thank you, Aaron, so much for joining me for coffee. How can people find out about you, your work, and your growing platform?
So if you just search my name on Google, I'm sure I'll come up somewhere. You can find me on LinkedIn. My name is Aaron Slaughter. I work for Withum Smith & Brown. My email address is my first initial A, my last name Slaughter, SLAUGHTER, at Withum, WITHUM .com. So there are tons of ways to get a hold of me, but yeah, reach out on LinkedIn, shoot me a friend request, and I will find you.
All right. And Aaron, for those who may be interested in hiring a CPA, are you available for hire, or would you be able to give them suggestions of who they can work with?
So I am not a tax accountant. So if you were looking for someone to do your taxes, still give me a call, because I have people at my firm who can do it for you. And I would just connect you to whoever you need to talk to. If you're looking for planning your wills and financial planning and wealth management, I can connect you who you need to talk to. If you are really just looking for your annual tax return done, we certainly do that as well. But I am in the audit department. So give me your CEO, give me your CFO, give me your controller, because those are the people who I want to talk to.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Aaron, for your time. I appreciate it. I'll chat with you soon. Well, what did you think? I took a lot of notes, and actually a lot of stuff that Aaron was telling me in the interview while we were chatting, I went ahead and did them. Because when an accountant gives you some suggestions, baby, you take them, okay? Okay. Thank you so much, Aaron, for taking time out of your day to join me for coffee. If you want to learn more about me and my business, go ahead and go to pinkdollhousemarketing.com, or you can find me on Instagram at pinkdollhousemarketing. You can slide into my DMs. That's cool. You can also find my personal page at Pink Doll Style on IG. And if you're on that Clock app, aka TikTok, go ahead and follow me at Pinky Creates. For our next episode, we will be chatting with Ms. Karen Aaron, President and CEO of the Green Book Experience. And this is a bonus episode, y'all. Hold up. Burr, 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 burr. And we are kicking off Black History Month with this topic about cultural tourism. And for those of y'all who did not know, and I'll share it again, but it is on my LinkedIn, I worked in tourism for 6 years, so I understand the impact that tourism has on the Black cultural experience and how important it is to continue to tell our stories and recognize our stories through the power of travel. But that episode will drop on the first day of Black History Month. We're gonna kick it off right, okay, okay. Anyway, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to join me for coffee, and I cannot wait to chat with you soon. Okay, bye. Coffee with Yvonne is produced and edited by Yvonne Pearson. Coffee with Yvonne is created by Pink Dollhouse Marketing. You can catch the latest episodes by subscribing to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.